Hello, homeowners, and welcome to the podcast Defend the Foreclosure, where we bring homeowners advice and resources to help them better understand the foreclosure process. My name is Stephen Gomez. I'm one of the hosts here at Defend the Foreclosure, where our mission is to show homeowners the best way to stop a lender from foreclosing on their home. We're fortunate today to have a very special guest, someone acknowledged as a true expert in the field of foreclosure defense, attorney Neil Garfield. Hello, Neil, and welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Steve. I'm glad to be here and to get the message out to everybody that they actually can win.
All right, awesome. Hey, Neil, you don't know this, but I'm an avid reader of your blog, Living Lies, and we'll get into that a little bit more on the show. But you know, one thing that really comes across in it is your passion for helping homeowners win foreclosure defense cases. It comes across so clearly and articulately that I have to ask you, where does this passion and expertise come from?
Well, it actually dates back half a century. When I was on Wall Street, and I had all the doors open because my family owned seats on all the exchanges, and I was in investment banking, and I was licensed as a broker and a financial analyst and all that stuff. I could do very well. I understood the practices there. But after about 3-4 years, it became apparent to me that I couldn't live with what I was doing. I'm not saying that Wall Street is bad per se. It isn't. It's a necessary component of our system. But in order to survive on Wall Street, you have to suspend conscience and not care about what the actual consequences are to a customer or investor. So I went, after doing a number of successful deals, I completely abandoned the whole Wall Street thing that my family had set up for me. And I ended up going and getting my MBA and my law degree and all of that stuff and just practicing law. And I guess part of the generational thing is that my mother in particular was always for the underdog. And that bled into me. And so that's what I did in nearly 50 years of law practice. I've always tended to take the cases that involved the underdog tenants, tenants associations, condominium associations, et cetera, against the developer and whatnot.
Wow. Well, you chose a good underdog in homeowners because they're certainly that against the big banks. You know, maybe we could just start off with what you're seeing currently in the state of the foreclosure market in regard to volume of cases and where do you see that trend line going? Because there's been some news about that recently.
Well, the volume, I have to answer, and the reason I pause is there's kind of two answers to your question. The volume of cases is spiking tremendously in certain states, just like it did in 2008. You see in New York, Florida, California, Georgia, which is a new thing, and a bunch of other states are percolating as well. Local press is reporting spikes everywhere, but mainstream media is getting their information from the likes of Black Knight and CoreLogic, etc., and they're putting out reports as though foreclosures are not increasing at all. In fact, they're down to an all-time low, according to them. My business as a consultant, a legal consultant, I don't go to court anymore, has just mushroomed. And I'm dealing with the difficulty of bandwidth and having to turn down a lot more people than I used to.
Wow. So that does speak to the current surge in cases. I think it was Adam Data that just recently came out with New York number one and Florida number two in the number of new cases being filed.
That sounds right. I mean, I haven't done a study, but it sounds right.
You know, this is really our audiences are homeowners, and they don't have a lot of sophistication, as you very well know, with respect to what right. can seem like some very sophisticated legal processes in foreclosure. I wonder maybe we could jump to just some of the basic mistakes that you see homeowners make when they get sucked into this process we call foreclosure.
Well, the first thing they do is, it's not a mistake, really. I mean, how would they know? After they made an application for a loan, they think that's the process they're in. But the real process that they're in is issuing documents that actually become securities. And as issuers, they're entitled to compensation. They meant to take out a loan, there's no question about it, but they didn't. And that doesn't mean that they didn't make a promise to pay money. But the amount that is actually due is something that gets involved in the whole complex securitization thing. The important thing for defense of mortgage foreclosure, and the way I keep winning, is just assuming that if push comes to shove, they're never going to be able to produce a witness or an exhibit from the creditor who has been named as a creditor as though it owned the unpaid loan account. I don't try to prove anything. I just use the procedures in discovery. That's what it's called when you're in litigation. And of course, they never answer. And you keep pushing until it becomes a fight between the opposing attorney and the judge instead of a fight between the opposing attorney and me.
Interesting. Interesting. You know, I've got a quote here from your blog. Allow me to read it briefly. Foreclosure is strictly about the satisfaction and release of an unpaid debt. It is not about allowing anyone who knows something about you to force you to make payments or else lose your home. There is no default without injury, and there is no injury without an unpaid loan account that has been reduced in value because of a gap in scheduled payments. And there is no evidence of such injury until you see the unpaid loan account, not the payment history. A really interesting statement there. Can you elaborate on that? Needs to see the unpaid loan account?
In olden times, you know, I'm going to be 76 in 2 months.
Wow.
So I've been practicing law, you know, close to 50 years, investment banking longer.
God bless you.
It used to be, up until, I'd say, the late 90s, that, and frankly, what I'm about to describe to you has happened to me. Because I represented banks and lenders and other institutions. We'd go in, ask for foreclosure. The owner of the property wouldn't even show up at the hearing because they didn't think they had any defense or anything like that, and they really didn't. There was a loan account. It was due. They didn't pay a scheduled payment. And so they didn't see any point in hiring a lawyer, throwing good money after bad. But we'd still get thrown out and lose the hearing if our paperwork was not in order, and our paperwork had to include a copy of the ledger. If you didn't include a copy of the ledger showing the loan account, then you had no foundation for the case. And this regularly happened. You know, when I got sloppy, I got thrown out. I had to come back. Then something changed starting in the late 1990s, where it was basically policy from the courts, which of course violates separation of powers. Policy is supposed to come from the legislature. And the assumption was that if nobody else is making a claim against you, then the party who is making a claim must be right. So the extension of this, and we've seen this in the marketplace, and the FBI has been involved, Department of Justice, and people have been prosecuted, where people, you know, go through the mail in somebody's mailbox, and then they pose as a servicer. And they say, your debt to American Express has been assigned to us for collection. Please make your payments to this address, blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, American Express hasn't told you anything. And so what is happening is that anyone with knowledge of the fact that you entered into that transaction can step in and make a claim as though they had a financial or economic interest in your transaction when in fact they don't.
Well, that sounds like fraud.
It is fraud. But the problem with a fraud claim is, number one, it has to be proven by clear and convincing evidence, not just by, more likely than not, a preponderance. And there are very specific elements of a fraud case, which in most cases you're never going to be able to prove, because in order to prove it, you need documents and truthful testimony from the other side, which they're never going to give you.
Are these isolated incidents? Is this happening today, or
This is the rule. This is not the exception.
So you're saying this is an example of maybe they didn't go through the garbage can, but they got a fictitious assignment of a...
Right.
They created one. They created it.
They fabricated it.
On their own or in conjunction with the original obligation?
Let me rephrase your question. On their own, no. This was the puppeteer behind all of this is always an investment bank. When Wall Street got involved in the lending marketplace, everybody assumed that they were interested in lending. They never were interested in lending. Wall Street is always interested in selling and trading securities. So that's just not happening. So they've set up a web in which they have multiple layers, each composed of multiple players, each of whom is either a sham entity, in other words, doesn't exist at all, it's just a name, or it's a registered business entity that does nothing and has nothing. And what they have effectively done is avoided the requirements of the Truth in Lending Act for a lender, because the investment bank is never called the lender. And they've never been called the lender because they're not holding any loan account. And the reason they're not holding any loan account is that they don't need to. When they go out, borrow money, they use that borrowed money to make a payment to the closing table with a homeowner. They sell securities based upon the homeowner's issuance of certain documents. They pay off the loan and they keep the balance. There is no party in this entire scheme that has ever lost money as a result of non-payment by a homeowner. Now, I'm well aware that there are lawyers and judges and other people who think they know something about investment banking who say that I am, you know, some kind of conspiracy theorist or nuts or whatever. But anyone who has seen my resume and who has attended one of my seminars knows very well that I know exactly what I'm talking about. And in the end, you know, starting in 2006, when I first went on radio and TV and that kind of thing to warn of the foreclosure wave that was going to happen, in the end, not one single person from Wall Street has ever stepped forward to say I'm wrong. Not one.
Interesting. So if it is the scheme you're describing, and I certainly believe you from my own research and readings, what's the effective, what's the most effective defense in court for a homeowner?
Well, that's the point. You don't have to believe it in order to win. You know, I've won many cases, and I have to tell you that in many cases where I've won, my client is still scratching their head wondering how and why they actually won. Because it seemed impossible to them. After all, they got a loan, didn't they? Well, the answer to that is no. But that thought is like, how can you even say that? That's what's going through their mind. The only thing you need to do as a defense lawyer or a pro se defender is to stop the other side from putting on any evidence. And you do that by asking for corroboration of their allegations. And you need to know what their allegations are, because it's usually implied in what are considered form pleadings that are pre-approved by the Supreme Court of that state. So if you ask the right questions, they're never going to be able to answer the question. And when they don't answer the question, then you have to file a motion to compel. And then they still won't answer the question, and you'll file a motion for sanctions, and they still won't answer, but the judge will give them a little bit more time, and they still won't answer. At that point, you can ask for sanctions, and there's two types of sanctions. One is evidentiary sanctions, or pleading sanctions, and the other is economic sanctions. Economic sanctions means they get fined. You don't want a fine. You want evidentiary and pleading sanctions. Strike their pleadings if they can't corroborate that they are the owner of an unpaid loan account due from the homeowner.
And this is done at trial or in discovery?
During discovery, it's called pre-trial motions.
So what's the end result for the homeowner if they get these sanctions? Are they off the hook? What happens?
Well, that's an interesting question, because what has happened in most cases where we have gotten to that point is that suddenly an offer is made to the homeowner, which involves a payment of money to the homeowner to basically shut up. And the objective is to get the homeowner to acknowledge the continuing existence of a loan agreement, even if the amount allegedly due is far less than what was originally proposed.
In that scenario,
they also get an agreement to scrub the court record. So you don't find, like in the cases I've won, I mean, you may find the final judgments, but for the most part, anytime a homeowner wins, the court record is scrubbed, which is, I'm not sure if that's legal or not, but they do it. And when the homeowner wins, there's never an appeal. So there's nothing in the appellate record that affirms a homeowner winning. The only thing in the appellate record is where the other side won. And it's very hard to find, well, it's hard to find trial court cases anyway, but where the homeowner has won, it's almost impossible to find those cases. And I've been challenged on that several times. And I've proven my point to the lawyers who have challenged me simply by giving them the name of a case to go look for. And they found a reference to it, an index to it, but they couldn't get any of the documents that were ever filed in the case, which is public record, and that should not happen, but it does.
So that's fascinating. So if I'm understanding you correctly, in the scenario you just described, not only did the foreclosure against the homeowner not prevail, they oftentimes actually receive money for failure of the banker or the plaintiff to corroborate their standing and
right, because they have no standing, they have no case, they have no loss, they have no account that they'll credit if they get any money.
So where does that leave the homeowner? So you mentioned that they still have an account, quote unquote.
Yeah, that goes back to the question before. I'm sorry I didn't answer it. Theoretically, you would think that this would enable the homeowner to clear title by getting an order quieting title. But in practice, getting a quiet title order is far more difficult than it looks on paper. So I've seen more success quieting title against the actors who were previously going after the homeowner, but getting title completely cleared is sometimes another story. Now, there are people like me who structure transactions, and we could do the same thing that Wall Street does. We could layer sales of the property and even new loans on the property such that the old stuff on there that's unenforceable just fades into the dustbin of history. But during that period of time, there's still a cloud on title. So you're not paying any mortgage payments. You do have to pay your taxes because that has nothing to do with it. You do have to pay your insurance if you want to be insured. But you're not paying any mortgage payments. So it really works best for those people who intend to live in the house for some time going forward, and not for people. It doesn't work as well, and they're likely to take a settlement of much lower value to the homeowner if they're looking to get out of the deal altogether right away.
So in the scenario you're describing, they're not paying any mortgage payments, but there's still this mortgage, quote unquote, of record on the property.
Right.
Is that correct?
Yeah, it's recorded and it's in the public records of that county.
Is it continuing to be reported as a non-paying account on that homeowner's credit report?
Well, that's chances are no. In most cases, the answer is no, because there's an action under the Fair Credit Reporting Act that if they're showing an amount due in connection with that recorded instrument or a note or whatever, then they have to identify to whom the amount is due, which brings us back to the original problem we were talking about when we first came on the air.
Interesting. Well, this is fascinating. So you've kind of gone through a scenario in which the homeowner wins, and you're right. You don't hear a lot about that. You don't hear about the homeowner winning. And we know from your explanation probably why it's not in.
Well, practically every homeowner who wins is paid to execute a non-disclosure agreement.
Wow. So that's why you can't find case law on this.
Right.
Fascinating. You know, could for a homeowner who's just getting involved in this process, and we've got a whole new legion of them coming to the fore as
right.
They're starting to get the notices of defaults, could you give our homeowners some advice about what's probably the very first thing they should do when they get a notice of default from their lender?
Well, the first thing they should do is talk to a lawyer, because they should be sending out a qualified written request under the Real Estate Settlement and Procedures Act and a debt validation letter under the FDCPA, the Fair Debt Collectors Procedures Act, immediately. And when they don't get an answer to the basic question of what's the identity of the party to whom I actually owe this money, because they own the unpaid loan account, then you file a complaint with the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Board, and now you've exhausted the administrative remedies. But it's a crime when they respond to the complaint to the CFPB to lie. So the answer you get when you file a complaint to the CFPB is more likely to skirt the truth than the answer you'll get just to from the QWR, the Qualified Written Request, or the Debt Validation Letter, DVL. Well, and then you file an action under the FDCPA and RESPA for violation, because every alleged borrower has a right to know who his creditor is.
It sounds just like fair play, but you just don't hear a lot about it. And that's, I guess, the point.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
And frankly, you don't, because based upon the data that I've received, and I'm not saying I conducted the survey, I didn't, but combined surveys and reporting of data, 98.5% of all homeowners who are threatened with foreclosure do absolutely nothing.
98%?
98.5.
Wow.
Of those, about half do almost nothing.
Now, you these are some of your clients. Why do you think people just do nothing? Is it they just feel powerless?
Well, yeah. I mean, we've got a system at work here where a policy decision was made. There's nothing I'm telling you that the Federal Reserve doesn't already know. There's nothing that I'm telling you that the Department of the Treasury doesn't already know. In fact, Alan Greenspan at least skirted, danced with the issue when he admitted that he didn't know what these so-called derivatives were or what was really happening in securitization. So what you're dealing with is lawyers who should simply stick to what they know, which is the practice of law. And if they don't know something about accounting or bookkeeping or investment banking, they shouldn't assume that they do know it. But that's exactly what judges, lawyers, and the client of the lawyers do. The homeowners assume, because they reasonably believed, I mean, it's not a mistake. They were tricked, and so they believed what they were told. You know, this. I'm not blaming the victims here. They just don't know. And what I'm saying here seems like, you know, crazy stuff. But
it's the truth.
Yeah, it's the truth, and the truth is pretty simple here. You don't need to prove anything. You just need to demand and be very aggressive. Corroboration in testimony and documents. So, for example, if U.S. Bank, which is frequently cited as trustee for the XYZ trust, blah, 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 blah. When you pursue discovery, you don't want to use the usual method. You want to identify that the only person that will be acceptable to you is an officer of U.S. Bank. They're never going to give that to you. And it's the problem is that people who are not litigators throw their hands up and say, oh, we tried. But it's when they refuse to obey a lawful subpoena or notice that you've got them. Well, you don't have to be right about the debt.
Exactly. You know, it sounds like there is so much misinformation and I want to say malpractice, but a lot of uneducated lawyers trying to represent homeowners. That's a part of your practice also, isn't it, Neil? And basically educating and training other attorneys looking to serve homeowners.
Correct.
In foreclosure defense.
I do half-day and full-day seminars for one-on-one with lawyers who want to get involved with this, and they go off and they make a lot of money successfully defending foreclosures.
Well, it's certainly needed, and we sense that it's a wave that's coming again. You just look at the data, it doesn't lie, depending on the state you're in, but we're in for some rough times ahead. It's almost universally being acknowledged. It's going to be a tough year ahead for homeowners. There certainly has been a correction in the housing market. You know, Neil, you've been such a great guest. We're so honored to have had you here. And maybe we could end with you sharing with our homeowners how they might be able to get in touch with you.
Well, I think they know. And frankly, I can't handle the volume of calls I'm getting now.
Well, how about a resource? Your blog is a great resource for a homeowner.
Yeah,
maybe you could share with us the title, yeah, and where your blog is at, so they might be able to read more about your
writings. Okay, the blog is basically a working treatise on litigation, a foreclosure defense. And it provides specific information that's current on the methods, strategies, and tactics to defend the foreclosure. So if you go to livinglies.me or livinglies.wordpress.com and just read the latest series of blog articles, you will probably be brought up to date by reading four or five articles.
Fantastic. Neil, such a pleasure. Thank you again for your valuable time and for being the resource you are to homeowners. I certainly recommend every homeowner in facing foreclosure, certainly read your blog. Once again, thank you for your time being our guest on Defend the Foreclosure. Neil, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.